What's up, y'all? Jeremy Jackson here at the NATA Expo. I'm at the Dragonfly booth. We're broadcasting live the sports medicine broadcast. My buddy Megan McKay brought over some of her coworkers, Dr. Theodore Scheibit, just did a surgery on stage. Right, so we're at the NATA Expo. You just did a Ladder J procedure on stage at the NATA Expo, showing what happens, right? Because I know athletic trainers, we don't do the surgeries, but some of us are now becoming surgical techs or working in that room. But it's also important for us to understand the procedure, how it happens, so we can explain it to our athletes, how we can rehab and things we shouldn't do. So it's a really cool opportunity. So thanks for being here. Thanks for doing that. Thanks for joining me on the podcast.
Thanks for having us. And yeah, as you alluded to, I think athletic trainers for a long time have done basically everything, you know, but been in the surgery itself. And so now as we have people like Jonathan here at Baylor, we're starting to sort of bridge that gap and see athletic trainers kind of come even further into the clinical realm and into the operating room. Because as you said, you kind of do everything from, you know, assessing the athletes, prehabbing them, rehabbing them, kind of taking care of anything else that may go on in and around the surgery. So doing kind of a live demonstration of a procedure was a nice way to try to give some insight into what happens in the operating room, kind of between the injury assessment workup, kind of, hey, you need to have something done. And then when they show up with some bandages on in the training room and they're ready to start their rehabilitation.
All right. So tell me a little bit about the procedure and why you chose to do that one here.
Yeah. So this is one of the reasons we chose. Maybe I guess back up and give some background. So the Ladder J procedure is something that's done for recurrent shoulder instability. It's definitely not the sort of workhorse or mainstay. Most athletes with a glenohumeral dislocation and instability that needs surgery will do very well with an arthroscopic capsulolabral repair or arthroscopic Bankart surgery. The Ladder J procedure is a more involved open procedure that really is indicated for people that have failed prior surgery or have bone loss. One of the things that surgeons learned when they started doing arthroscopic shoulder stabilizations was that the subset of people with significant bone loss actually had a much higher failure rate. And so this surgery addresses some of the anatomical issues in people with bone loss by bringing basically bone from the coracoid process of the shoulder to the front of the glenoid, so you make the socket deeper. It also still allows for a capsulolabral repair, so we leave some of the soft tissues, the CA ligament stump on the coracoid when we transfer it over and sew that into the capsule, so you still get like a capsulolabral reconstruction. And then by moving the conjoint tendon at the tip of the coracoid to kind of the anterior inferior aspect of the glenohumeral joint, when the arm is up in abduction external rotation where that classic anterior shoulder instability position is, the conjoint tendon actually serves as a sling to kind of reinforce the shoulder. So as those muscles contract, they're dynamically stabilizing the humeral head and the glenohumeral joint. So it's a very, very deep surgical procedure with a lot of technical detail, a lot of anatomical complexity. And one of the things we were able to try and point out is just some of the anatomy of the shoulder. For example, when we looked at the subscapularis, the front of the rotator cuff, kind of stopped and pointed out the axillary nerve. So got to see a lot of things that we don't normally see day to day.
All right. So you're saying it's open, you're moving the bone, and again, I'm not a doctor. I don't do all this. But is this a surgery that an athlete would have?
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, the return to sport rates have been fairly good in some of the French literature where the surgery was initially described. One of the studies that's been published recently that we cited in our talk was a comparison of arthroscopic Bankart versus open Bristow Ladder J patients. And in that, it was about 60 patients or so in that study. I think in that study, the return to sport rate was slightly higher in the arthroscopic Bankart, but the recurrent dislocation rate, even though it didn't reach statistical significance, was also higher in that group. And the indications are a little bit different too, so you may be getting kind of an apples and oranges comparison. But short answer, yes, and absolutely, if it's somebody with an unstable shoulder, particularly if they've failed a prior arthroscopic procedure, it's a very useful technique to get good stability and return to sport. it's sort of something that I think was off the radar in the States for a while, and as it's kind of come back into popularity now, there are like folks coming through at the NFL Combine. There's every year there's folks, for example, that have had this procedure done. Certainly not common, not something that you're going to see, you know, in hundreds or very, very frequently. Some of the athletic trainers we spoke to afterwards had kind of mentioned a case or two where they had seen one. So that was another reason why we chose to highlight this procedure, is that it's not so commonly done, and a lot of people may not be familiar with it because it's less common. So it was a nice way to sort of familiarize everybody with the concept and with the procedure.
All right, so in your presentation, you had a question and answer session at the end. What were some of the better questions that were asked?
One good question, and there's not a great answer for it, was about overhead athletes. And we're used to seeing recurrent instability in our contact and collision athletes. And so someone that doesn't have to get their arm into hyperabduction external rotation, treating instability in a thrower, you know, a baseball pitcher, for example, is a really, really, really challenging prospect. And that's something where, I mean, you have to sit down with kind of the athlete and probably their family and anybody else that's involved in their sports, you know, career and decision-making, and just talk to them about, you know, what sort of the trade-off is with, you know, the more sort of stable or tight you make a shoulder, the harder it is to throw. And so the prospects there are definitely more guarded. But somebody, you know, lacrosse player, football player, rugby player, somebody who's doesn't need that extreme motion to kind of perform in their sport usually will do really well. One of the other good questions that came up, and I'll kind of ask maybe Jonathan to weigh in, was just about having kind of introducing athletic trainers into the clinical realm, and kind of how we got started with that and how Jonathan got started with that. So the audience may be interested in hearing that.
Yeah. So I got started basically by getting scooped up by a physician who had been through a sports fellowship with athletic trainers being in their clinic as well. And he sort of mentored me for about a year on how to do that. And I've just progressed from there. But in the athletic training world now, there's a lot of residencies are popping up around town. They're being certified or accredited through the KD for postgraduate residencies in clinical athletic training, where you can get some experience and knowledge on how to do it and how to sort of manage the physician's clinic and do the surgery assist stuff. So there's a lot of good opportunities for advancement. Again, it's going to be postgraduate degree type stuff. So that's what's out there, and that's what's available, and how I got started.
Yeah, just to tack on to that, one of the things that as we were looking at incorporating athletic trainers into our clinical practice at Baylor, I spoke to some other orthopedic surgeons who've had athletic trainers in their practices, and the response was and experience has been overwhelmingly positive. So we certainly welcome it and see that as a growing trend in the future.
All right, so Jonathan, is this something that you think you'll stick with the rest of your career?
Oh, definitely. I like to think of it that this is sort of the final career move here. I've been bouncing around through high school, college sports, and in a previous clinic, and now I'm here at Baylor. We're starting to build a program. We're doing really well, and definitely hope to be here for the remainder of my career.
Doing the surgical assist, doing the same aspect?
Correct. Yeah, clinical athletic training, practice management, and surgical assist type stuff, yeah.
Very interesting. All right, so what was the hardest part about the switch for you into the surgical assist?
I actually really didn't know much about it at all. Like I said, I kind of got scooped up by a physician who was really interested in having it. I was working as an outreach athletic trainer in a clinic, and he came in from his fellowship and said, hey, this is how we worked over at our fellowship, and this is what I want you to do. And I took on really quick, I guess. I learned a little bit, learned fast, and we kept going from there, and it's just something I really enjoyed and had a good time doing, so I stuck with it.
All right, Dr. Shea, but if there is an athletic trainer that is interested in doing that, what's something that you want them to have? Do you want them to have the high school field experience before they become one in your clinic with a clinical assist?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think so. I think even hiring somebody in, one of the important roles that an athletic trainer serves in the clinic is actually to communicate with athletic trainers who are working with your patient athletes or physical therapists or other people involved in the rehabilitation. So having some experience on the athletic training side or team sports side, I think is really important so that they understand exactly what goes on in the training room and how what happens in the clinic kind of relates and vice versa.
I got you. What else? What else you got?
And is you know, a couple of I think other key take homes from the talk for shoulder instability. One of them was if you have an athlete with an instability event, get an X-ray, get a good set of X-rays, because mm-hmm. Again, that factors into this question of bone loss. Some athletes will have an acute glenoid rim fracture or bony Bankart fracture that can be stabilized early and may save them a later J later on. The other was that if you're assessing someone and they have apprehension in kind of the mid-range of motion, so not at the full like sort of 90 degrees abduction, but more like 45 of abduction, they start to externally rotate, and even at that lower angle, they get really apprehensive. You have to be more concerned that they have significant bone loss, and that those are the kind of the people that we tend to really look for on imaging for those kind of bony deficiencies that might lead us more toward a later J procedure over kind of a traditional arthroscopic Bankart.
So me as an athletic trainer, if I start to do the apprehension test, but just like you said, at 45, they start to dart or even pop out, then I need to think, okay, it's a positive test there. I don't need to press it further. And I also need to just mention to the doctor, hey, you know, I heard
from
Dr. Scheibitt,
and
he said this.
Right. They have mid-range apprehension. They're really apprehensive, and that often indicates a greater degree of instability.
All right. You got anything else to add?
I think that's it. I think we're good.
All right. Shout out to Megan McKay there. I think she's streaming live too. So, Megan, thanks for bringing them over. Thanks for bringing guests over. Again, we're live at the Dragonfly booth here at the 2017 Houston edition of the National Convention. I am Jeremy Jackson, host of the Sports Medicine Broadcast. Dr. Scheibitt, if somebody wants to get a hold of you,
you can call our clinic at Baylor, 713-986-6016. I'm also online at scheibittmd.com.
There you go. And then spell that.
What's that?
Spell that.
Oh, scheibuttmd.com.
There you go.
Thanks for having us on.
Anyone wants to get hold of you?
Just call the same clinic number. They can find out me, and we'll go from there.
All right. There you go. Thank you guys for coming.
Thank you. It was awesome. Okay.